You're listening to Bit by Bit, July 16th, 2008, at the Building Learning Communities Conference. Hello and welcome. This is Bob Sprankle with Bit by Bit, a podcast by Teachers for Teachers, and we are back at BLC 2008 at the LLN November Group's Building Learning Communities Conference. And we've got a presentation here from Alan November himself. It's a presentation I've been wanting to see for a while. I've read a lot of this information on Alan's site, and it has really taught me so much about surfing the web and how to use information. And I've just been waiting for the day that he compiles all this in a nice book that I can carry around and give to teachers, hand over to them. And he's done that. He's just published the book. I just bought it a few minutes ago. It's called Web Literacy for Educators. And it is incredible. And this talk centers a lot on that. The talk is called Teaching Zach Web Literacy. And it is phenomenal. So sit back and enjoy. Here's Alan November at the BLC 2008.
Not at the price of this conference. Okay. You got me. By the way, we're not going to raise the prices next year. It's been the same price for 4 years. It'll be the same price probably for the next 4 years. We can manage that. Okay, so I'm going to go as quickly as I can. This is a longer than an hour, but we'll get started. And just to let you know, there's no big philosophical ideas here. It's actually a practical, useful workshop as opposed to most of my others that are just random musings. So let's just get started. Let's decide what happens with Google. Because I've noticed that some students use Google. And, oh, I'm not on, am I? Doesn't plug that in, maybe. You should tell me things like that. Because I raced in here, and let's hope it just pops. I don't know. Is it going to pop? Looks like it's going to pop. Great. And certainly follow along. And the notes are on the website. You're going to find that at novemberlearning.com, there's just about everything I'm doing and a lot more. And of course, you'll want to race out and buy my book. Web literacy, but we have a lot of free stuff on the website. Okay, so you might just start, you know, November is a pretty common word and gets me in trouble every once in a while. In fact, November in Google, it comes up with 1,270,000,000. That's really a lot, and no one's going to look at that many. Wikipedia is almost always toward the top when you type in a common word, New York, Texas, breast cancer, and I just believe we should know how it works, because I've watched students, and the research is fairly clear that students are only looking at the top screen, and students typically do not use more than one search engine during a search. They stick with the same search engine. Instead of trying to figure out, well, maybe I should get different results than with the same search engine. And I've watched my own kids and kids in other places, and it has occurred to me they don't understand the sorting algorithm of Google, why things pop up. So if you're only going to look at the top screen, chances are you're being manipulated every time you use Google, every time. And you don't know you're being manipulated. See, my website is number 7, I think, today. 1, 2, 3, 4. It's 5, 6, November Learning Home, out of 1,270,000,000. Now you're hard to impress, aren't you? So let me just say this again. I'm number six. This is like my mother when she paid children in the neighborhood to play with me. I can't beg you to applaud. It doesn't work like that. Get it right next time, the first time, okay? Get it right. But I am. If ever learning it. And it's important for us to know how Google works, because if I was number 25 out of 1,270,000,000, you wouldn't find my stuff. So I just have to know. I just think people who understand how to get their stuff to the top will have more power over people who don't know how to do the same thing, even though somebody else might have better stuff. So it's important to know how all this works. And Wikipedia, let's just take this one, because this is the one your students are going to find in almost any common word. And so to break it down, what's interesting to me is Wikipedia people know how it works, and they take the title of the article, in this case November, and they make sure that it's in the web address. Part of the algorithm of Google looks for the web address, it finds the word November, that was what you typed in the search bar, so now we're one for one, and it's moved up. The second, or another variable, is in the title bar. The people at Wikipedia understand this as well, and they take the title of the article and stick it in the title, November, Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia at the top. So now we're two for two. Then there's content on the article, November, 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 November. Then there's links coming in. The Google algorithm is able to figure out which web pages are linked to which other web pages, not hits, links. And if we quickly go back to Google itself, we can figure out why Wikipedia almost breaks the bank in any search term that's common in the English language. We type in link:wikipedia.org, we hit a Google search, and lo and behold, there are 377,000 links hitting Wikipedia. That's a lot. Not only that, but the algorithm figures out which web pages coming in that are linked have lots of links going into them. So Apple is linked to my website. They use some of our content in their professional development work. They're linked to November Learning. A lot of people are linked to Apple. And so Apple brings great strength of numbers in their link to my website, and Google sees the links to the links, and I'm moving up. Your school might be linked to me using my stuff, but you're not Apple. You just don't count as much. Although I do think you should link to our site. It moves me up even further. Thank you. Okay. So now we have basic understanding. I mean, we teach children the alphabet when they're quite little. We take them and we make them memorize the alphabet, because we know that sorting and retrieving information is a basic skill. How do you sort it? Can you imagine going into a library and not knowing the alphabet or the Dewey Decimal System, and you only look at the top shelf, and that's it? And in the middle of the night, some guy like me gets to break into the library, and I put my stuff on the top shelf, and the librarian doesn't even know. That's what's going on. And I'll just give you a sense of this. So I'm deeply, deeply worried that unless you understand algorithms of sorting information, whether it's the alphabet, or the Dewey Decimal System, or Google, if you don't know, you don't know, you could be manipulated. All right, so that's just basic stuff. Now, let's go on. The other day, how many of you were in my leadership workshop? I don't want to, just one or two. Good. Okay, we found this yesterday, and I was stunned. This is absolutely random kind of accident. I went to Alta Vista, and I wanted to see, because I was doing the Martin Luther King thing that I'll show you later, but I just wanted to limit my results host:, UK. The host command in Alta Vista allows you to limit your results to an extension, and Country codes are two letters, UK, JP for Japan. And most websites outside the United States have a two-letter country code in them. We don't, because we invented the internet, so we decided you didn't have to have US. But we told the rest of the world, you're not the States, you have to do it. So, post colon, UK. And then I wanted to see who was linked to www.martinlutherking.org in the United Kingdom. So I clicked fine. And I hope it works today, because it was so amazing. Okay, Atlanta. Flight. So in the United Kingdom, there are 51 sites, websites, with a link to martinlutherking.org, which is owned by a white supremacist group. I'm sure most of you know. MartinLutherKing.org is owned by a white supremacist group. Go ahead, type Martin Luther King in Google, and you'll see this site at the top, because it's in the address, it's in the title bar, has links coming in, boom, 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 boom. Okay, you do that. Now, so we go to Atlanta. I couldn't believe this. This is a company, United Kingdom, that sells cheap flights. And they have a link to this white supremacist group. And I'm thinking, are they serious? And I open the site up, and in fact, they've got these great flights to Atlanta, and they're promoting Atlanta. They're trying to convince people to go to Atlanta. And I think I just lost my connection. Oh, it's a shame. Too bad, because the rest of this works. Oh, there we go. Okay, flight offers. Save 70%. New York, 216 pounds. There's a flight search they do. This is a real site. And down in here, it says, Atlanta lies in the Georgia of the USA, the Blue Ridge Mountains, city of more than 400,000 people. It's more than that, isn't it? Anyway, there's Atlanta, and there is the link, Martin Luther King. No one should miss the National Historic Site. And they have a link, Martin Luther King Jr. You click on that, and you come to a white supremacist hate site. Now, the people in London, or wherever they happen to be, who are putting this website together, I think I know what happened to them, which should never happen to your students. Except I bet it has happened to most of your students. So here's what I think. By the way, you understand what I've just done. I have found a site in England that doesn't know they're promoting Atlanta on their travel site for that city with a white supremacist hate group site. Okay, so here's what I think happened, just to bring home the point. If I go back to Google, and I bet a lot of you have already done this, and I type in Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King, in Google, I hit a Google search. That site, well, there's Wikipedia towards the top, and they went down, and they went, oh, yesterday it was number three. But there it is. True. So it's in the top, and it says right there, it's true. It says that. So what they did, they probably grabbed that site, because it was at the top of Google, and they put it as a link, promoting Atlanta. You never want this to happen to your students, do you? All right. We must teach children critical thinking. We must. This is basic. The web is the dominant media of society, not in schools, but outside of schools. And there's grammar and syntax, like there is with print. As boring as this is, understanding the algorithm of Google, how to find backlinks, how to tear apart the web layer by layer, it isn't even exciting, and it's not rocket science. And I think that's why we skipped over it, because it's relatively boring stuff, but you have to know how it works. Okay, so at this point, we kind of understand how Google works, and in fact, those of you who haven't seen me do this, I'll show you who owns that. You copy that. And one of the most important sites for educators to teach critical thinking on the web, I think, is the archive site, archive.org. Archive.org is lots of different things. I'm going to focus on one thing it does right now. It does this Wayback Machine. It's basically storing the internet in its entirety every couple of months since 94. So you ever come to a dead length, I'll show you this in a moment, you can get it. It's been off the web for 10 years, you can get it. Well, what I want to do, Martin Luther King hasn't been off, it's on. But I'd like to understand the history of this site. I just want to know what's going on here in terms of the development of content over time and who are these people. So it basically came up around April 21st, 99, and it's still going. This is just columns of dates. That's all this is. The asterisk means changes have been made since the last design of their webpage. And in fact, it was 2008, we don't have any yet. So I wonder if it's stock. But in any case, in 99, that's what I want. I want to see this thing at the beginning. And there it is. Now, it's the same exact web address, although it has this archive address that comes first. But the bit at the end here, martinlutherking.org, that's what you would find today. Same web address. Now, in 99, it's a different photograph of Martin Luther King. Different, it's black on red, which is very different than the more muted gray they're using now. It's much more subtle, smoother, gentle color today compared to the harsh black on red. It has different text in 99 than it does today. It has different links. By the way, what's nice about archive.org is the links work as well. You're not just seeing a picture of the site. You can get into it, move around in it. It's really fascinating. There's no comparison with books. You know, the Shakespeare I read is the Shakespeare my kids read. It's Shakespeare. It does not going to change. Books aren't dynamic. They're not fluid. They're static, and they stay the same. So this is different. This is a different media, and I think we should teach children to drill through content over time to understand patterns of word choice and purpose and audience. Because in 99, it's an adult site. It's recruiting for adults. It's serving adults in 99. At least that's my analysis. And if I go to it today, and you see the kind of references that are different today, it's, of course, I said the different photograph, but there's a lot of reference to education today. Watch the new educational video, learn more about Kwanzaa, download flyers to pass out at your school, and the little thumbprint sketch of the Civil Rights Library becomes much bigger in 2008 than it was in 99. I think we should teach kids a different way of decoding content. In other words, reading. I think we need to redefine reading. Right now, we basically teach reading only print on paper. You go to a school and you say, show me your reading curriculum, and they're going to bring out books. And they're going to tell you how they teach kids to read. Start at the top left corner, tell kids to read out loud, letter by letter, word by word, in a linear fashion, page by page, right? And we still, that's our definition of reading. Well, we gotta move on. It's necessary to teach reading like that. I accept that, but it's no longer sufficient. By the way, for those of you who are into the metacognitive development of ideas and media, the guru of all of this is Marshall McLuhan. When he was the dean of the Ed School at the University of Toronto in 1964, he coined two phrases that I bet everybody in this room knows. He coined Global Village, and he coined Medium is the Message. 64, McLuhan predicts the internet. People thought he was crazy. And because in 64, he's talking about hypertext. You know, what's that? But he did some studies, and he sorted out that very smart people who learn to think in one medium, and for many of our teachers that means paper, was the dominant medium of our ability to read and decode and create content. If you change the medium, people do not bring their critical thinking skills with them to the new medium. In fact, they think it's paper shoved down wire. They see paper, even though it's a completely different medium. If McLuhan was right, and I accept that certainly worth criticizing, we have a couple million teachers in the United States who are illiterate on the web, and they don't know they're illiterate. I would rather they knew. Okay, so now we've got the archive.org site, and we can drill through time and figure out, well, how'd something start? See, with a book, you look at the table of contents, right? Look between the two covers. Not on the web. Okay. Next little concept. If we go back, I'm going to go to AltaVista, and I do want to tear this apart. I know many of you have done this, but I'm going to try to do the advanced version of this. I need to know, all right, give me a community that has made reference of this site. I want to know who is making commentary on that site. And I've decided the people I want to know about are universities. Are there any universities linked to that site? host:edu. There's a space between org and host, for those of you following all this. And now I've got that there are 416 universities that have content with a link from the university webpage to the Martin Luther King site. Is this making sense? And you can see the pattern in the blue, headline, evaluating web information at Virginia Tech, Binghamton University of New York, evaluating internet resources, Pope sites, evaluating web resources. You kind of get the pattern here that these are a lot of evaluation sites at universities, and if you clicked on them, you opened them up, you'd see that they are saying, wait a minute, that's a hate site. Trying to look like an innocuous site called martinlutherking.org. So now I've got a community, a pattern, and that's one of the big differences between reading print and reading the web. In print, we teach you to read word by word. But in the web, we need to teach you to understand patterns of information. There's no other way. You can't go word by word. You need to jump to a higher level of accessing a lot of content at once. Making sense? I just made that up, by the way. But I think it's true. Okay. Now, further, I decide that, well, I know that Stormfront owns Martin Luther King, which I'll get to in a moment, but just trust me. This other website called Stormfront, I better show it to you, stormfront.org, www, I left out the www, link:/www.stormfront.org, click find. From 416, we drop down to 6, because the 6 have links to both sites, not just one. But now I've got 6 universities. This one is California State University, Bakersfield. I'll open this one up. Web credibility exercise with the answers. That's the link to Martin Luther King. By the way, it's you can't see the link. When you look at a website, you have no idea who's linked to that website. But the search engines do. And so in a moment, we can build a pattern of who's linked in to a site. And if I go back to the State University of Bakersfield, here's the link to Stormfront. And it's going to show me a different site. They own each other. This site with the modified SWAT sticker owns martinlutherking.org. And it explains that on the State University of Bakersfield site. Okay, now imagine this. Let's just add it up so far. A kid goes home to do project on civil rights. He probably goes to a public school that filters the web, so martinlutherking.org doesn't even show up when you use Google in school. And the school feels very confident that they're protecting the children because they have a really good filter. Meanwhile, homework is done at home, where there are no filters. So the child uses the same interface, Google, at home. Gets different results. And you're looking at this website, and you're 12 or 14 years old, and you have to figure out, is it true or not? You can't do that in your own head. You have to have tools for cross-referencing and validating content. That's my belief. We should not send children out in a world that's as complicated as this one without giving them tools for critical thinking and validating content. So I understand filtering is a federal mandate in this country. I appreciate that. Strom Thurmond threw a fit. I went to the White House for a testimony. I understand the history of that. And so we decided that filtering was our national policy. The only place that filters are schools. The only place where we have thoughtful teachers who could really help kids develop critical thinking is the one place you can't show those sites. So for those of you at the policy level, I know there's school board people here, superintendents here, filtering simply is not sufficient. In fact, by itself, it's probably remarkably dangerous as a federal policy. Is my attitude okay? It's a little stupid, but that's okay. All right, and then for those of you who probably know, I have to figure this out. Does Stormfront really own martinlutherking.org? So I go to easywhois.com. Easywhois.com, as many of you know, is one of those web pages where I can look up to see if a domain name is available because I want it. And so I'll type in martinlutherking.org in the little search bar in the Easy Who Is site and click the next. You've seen this routine before. And what it does is it gives me the background public information of, does the site have an owner already? And in fact, it was granted on January 14th, 1999, martinlutherking.org. It's up for renewal on January 11th. And it's owned by Stormfront. Now I know. This is not exactly, but it has some overlap with what you would call a title page of a book. There is no title page on the web. On a website, they don't have to have a title page or an ISBN number or anything like that that we find standard with books. In order to understand and track ownership, you actually have to leave the site very often and go to something like easywhois.org. And type in the domain name and find out who owns it. And you, of course, can hide ownership. This doesn't work all the time, but it's useful to know. And I believe that we teach children how to find the name of a book and the author of a book. When you're little, I think we should teach them how to find the owner of a website. The history, all that bit, the links coming in, links going out. How do we find links going out? So far, we've got the links coming in. Now, if I want to find the links going out of a website that have the same root domain, how many different pages are coming out of the site, I type host colon. Note that I'm in Alta Vista. I'm leaving out www, only the domain name, martinlutherking.org. Host colon, domain name. Fine. That site has 43 web pages with the same domain name. This is like building a virtual table of content. I can do this with your school. I can do any site. We can figure out what's going on that site. Now, I can look at the patterns of this really quickly, like you would with a table of content. Just remember, this page does not have a table of content, but I can generate one. Just like that. Jews, communism, the death of the dream. You know, you start adding this stuff up, it gets weirder and weirder. And I want to further, I can type in some keywords, beast. Click find. And then I'm going to get five. These five relate to the beast. So not only do I get all the web pages, but I can then put in keywords to zoom in on certain elements of content on a pattern of web pages. So I'm creating, as I said, this virtual table of contents on the fly. Now, in education, use a different example. I used to teach science, and NASA's got great stuff. So I just want to say NASA.gov and hit find. And then NASA has 7 million web pages. And they have their own search tool. I understand that. But this is interesting. 7 million web pages. How am I going to cut through that? Now, I could in Google. Let's say I'm interested in Mars solar rover. I'm interested in the rover on Mars powered by that solar thing. So I just type a couple more keywords, Mars rover solar, and click find, and the 7 million drops to 54,000. These 54,000 web pages deal with Mars, solar, and rover, but only at NASA. If I typed Mars, solar, and rover in Google, I'd get more than NASA. But I only want NASA. Yeah. And further detail reveals maybe more useful content for teachers. Type in lesson plan and quote after all that. And you now have 37 sites at NASA that are designed as lesson plans for teachers who are teaching Mars Solar Rover. Are you guys okay? You're not saying much. You're okay? You kind of look... I'm either boring you out of your mind, or you're thinking. It's the same look. And it's hard to distinguish that look. But let me share with you, because I know there are so many leaders in the room and staff development people. I don't know how to say this in a nice way that doesn't sound arrogant, but I'm from Boston and we're like this. I have taught people, I've tried to teach people tricks like this. And show them NASA. And then they only think it's for NASA. That using it for other domain names just doesn't click in. Do you know what I mean? It's a NASA example. I don't teach NASA. I'm never going to use the host command. So what I've learned is you need a lot of practice. You need a lot of examples. You got to give people, we don't have time today, but you got to give people a lot of examples. Otherwise, they think it's just for NASA. Not you, of course, but some other people. Now, in that regard, and I know I'm going quickly. I should show you on my website so you don't get frustrated. At novemberlearning.com, which you applauded too late for, there's a lot of stuff, activities, that some of you I know happen to use. And you're welcome to it. There's this free InfoLit resources section on the right under quick links. And you click on that. And it goes through a bunch of activities, quizzes and answer keys, and how do you validate a website, how do you find the publisher. We just did that, the history, external links. There's all kinds of activities here that are hyperlinked. If you want to review what we've just done so far, it's all there. Okay. Now, in the application, the creative application, see, so far, we haven't done anything very creative. We're only doing grammar, the rules of how the thing works. And then teachers, of course, add the creative side of the kinds of problems we give kids. And I'm convinced that to make meaning out of all this, excuse me. I've changed my own teaching, I teach a doctoral level class, and it's superintendents and principals, and everybody got a laptop. So I'm lucky everybody got a laptop. And people would ask me a question, and the answer was available on the web. It was readily available, and my students would ask me questions, what's an RSSB? You know, what's that? And they'd ask me, you know, things like that. And I used to answer them. I don't do that anymore. What we do now is I'll take one student per class, we'll take you, and I'll say, you're the official researcher of the day. I think we can do this from second grade up. That every day, there's a student who's assigned to be the researcher of that class. And as questions come in, the researcher of the class answers the question, not the teacher. You actually have to unteach teachers to give answers. We were taught to give answers. Now, unteaching is more difficult than teaching something new. Because the neurons have been firing, and those pathways are laid down in your brain. You probably wake up in the middle of the night with a nightmare answering student questions. Yeah, half asleep. But I would rather teach children in every class across the curriculum how to become a lifelong researcher than have the smartest kid in class give the answer. In order to organize all of that, let's just say that's no good alone, because where do they all go, all these great answers? And I'm convinced that starting every school year, at least this year, people go to Google, and Google has some great tools. And the easiest low-hanging fruit, this is what I think, low-hanging fruit, is under more, and of course then there's even more. I don't know who at Google came up with that. Even more? I mean, how many more can you do? Anyway, so there's custom search under even more, explore and innovate. You got to check this out. And create a custom search engine. And now, it's asking for my Google account. But I got to get my... So you can see, I have a Google account. I bet most of you have a Google account. Sign in. So now I'm signed in, you know how that goes, and I can design a new search engine. And nothing's in it, it's empty, empty search engine. But if I go back and I teach psychology again, or American history, I'm starting every year, at least the first year, because I'm not throwing it out. And every day, as students research fantastic tutorials and content, the web addresses are going to go into a search engine totally focused on the curriculum I teach. Because if you did the search in all of Google, have you watched? Sometimes kids get distracted. They do. And this is why we invented dictionaries and encyclopedias and libraries for years and years and years. We've been restricting kids. You only go to this book. You only go to this library. And there's times to use Google. I agree. But there are other times you just want a focused information resource. Plus, the kids own it because they've been building it. And I like the ownership of learning as a concept. By the way, for those of you who understand the Google tools, you can invite other people to build things with you, as we've invited you to build a Google map with us together. And you can invite 99 of your closest friends to build a search engine with you. So at the beginning of the school year, how many elementary teachers are in the room? Ah, fantastic. Your first faculty meeting. All the teachers go into a lab or have a laptop, and you launch a search engine by the name of your elementary school. And all the teachers all year in that elementary school will add resources as they find them, and you tell all the families with a link off the homepage of your school district, We're building a search engine for your kids by our faculty. I think the families who sent children to your school will be grateful to you that you're sharing the collective knowledge of teachers of a school building one information source linked to the curriculum. I can tell you're excited about this idea. Didn't go very far, did it? What? 99, 100. Oh, that's it. What, you have more friends? How many do you have? College students? 300 college students? You have 300. Oh, and a big, yeah, one of those lecture classes? Well, you're like, all these are 99. As far as I know, yeah. Let's see, search engines. I got a bunch of search engines, by the way. I got one in global warming. I got one in Texas history. I got Revolutionary War. There's a bunch of search engines. Homepage. Now, this one, which is starting out, because I went to the global warming thing. I'll show you so what it looks like. This is like the cooking class. I already got it out of the oven. This global warming has its own long web address. So you just copy that and you go to tinyurl.com. How many of you know about things like tinyurl? Oh, not enough. Let me just show you really, really quickly. When you get a really long web address, you don't like that's too long. So you copy it and then you go off to tinyurl.com. And there are other sites like this. And when you get to the tinyurl page, you paste in that very long one and you say, make me a small one. And now you have a small one. It's called tinyurl 57EF72. Click on that, and that's my search engine. Okay. Now, what's nice, because the person who first launches it, so as a professor, you're the master. You have more privileges than the guests do. Because a guest might mess up. And when you get into editing your search engine, you can go to the collaboration, and by the way, this is where you invite people. In a little collaboration tool here, you put in a name and an email, and you send off the invitation. They get the email. Now they can play. You got to do that to make the invitations work. And the other thing that's really nice is under the site tool, I can see a pull down of the other people who are contributors. And I can click on any one of their names and see which sites did they contribute. And if you didn't play by our rules, I'm going to kick out the site you contributed. Maybe I'll give you one more chance, and then I'm kicking you out. So for people who need a sense of control, the principal of an elementary school doesn't trust the teachers to put together decent sites, then the principal can kick out a teacher. For those of you who need that level of control, it's there. Okay. All right, so now we have a place, our own search engine, and it's growing and growing. For those of you thinking globally, if you're teaching, and I used to teach American history, and I got some friends in England teaching British history where they come across American content, I might invite some people in England to contribute to our search engine. I could get people around the world to be adding to our search engine. I can get parents, I can get graduate students, I'm going to build a community building a search engine. I'm going to find the best people in the world. How many of you have done this? One, two.
Can you share your search engine?
The whole world can use your search engine. There's no limit to how many people in the world can use your search engine.
But if you can use search engine,
then you have... It's like using any other search engine. Type in keywords. See, right now, what a lot of teachers are doing is they're putting individual links on their web page. I have to go to each one of those to find out what's inside each one. So you can do that, or you take all of your favorite links and dump them in one search engine, that you've designed from scratch, and all the content of all those websites is searchable at once. Oh, light bulbs, just start. I didn't explain this well at all, did I? I didn't. Because if I did, you would have been cheering again. And you just have, no, it's too late again. No! No! Yes.
So I can, ma'am. I can take an existing resource list and dump it into.
Yes. You can't take two different search engines and merge them together. Which I always get that question. At least I haven't figured out how to do that. So you have to put in each web address in the search engine you built.
Okay, but if I have an existing resource, like, I need to put in each of those resources separately.
Yes. So it's cutting, but once you, you know, and then, depending on whether, you know, I taught high school, and I trusted my kids, I think I would trust them today, and I know that some of my kids are really into my subject, most aren't, they're just getting it for a grade, but I got four or five kids who are researching tutorials and all kinds of stuff. I want those four or five kids, when they're home, to add to the search engine. That way, the work of four or five kids contributes to the benefit of the whole class. Or not. Because right now, I think four or five kids are getting ahead. I don't think the web is an equalizer at all. I think that is a huge myth. I think the web is a polarizer. I think the rich are going to get richer. I think the poor are going to get poorer. I just don't believe it. I watch what happens. I can see. So I think what we have to do is create some system where the work of everyone adds value to everyone else. And this is one of many, many, many tools that does that.
Is there an advantage of this over DIGO?
DIGO, or Delicious, or any of those bookmarking sites. Well, DIGO is fantastic because you can annotate as well. I don't have time to show DIGO, but DIGO is really good. But all content across all of your bookmarks in DIGO are not searchable at once, to my knowledge. Maybe they are. Are they? By tag. This is searchable by content within the website. Yeah, by tag. That's not. Yes.
So if you posted your URL to this global warming search on your website, for example, can anybody access it, or do they have to
yes.
log in with a Gmail?
Anybody can access it.
Okay.
No, you don't need to be a member of Google to access it. You don't have to give out your email. It's just another website. Has its own address, URL. Does not require a sign-in, just like Google.
So just to be clear on that, Alan, if we wanted to access global warming search engine, we type global warming in Google and this would pop up?
You know, I don't think it will. Because I don't have enough links coming into it, all of that. There's a way, though, I can go explore that. My search engines. I would suggest that you put a link on your web page to the search engine you build for your web class. And then you'll have to tell your students eventually to bookmark that address.
Your site?
The search.
How do you know your address?
All right, well, here's all my little bits. And one of my things is my search engine. Okay, so I'm in my own Google account. I do need to be a member of Google to do this, but I'm just trying to get access. Okay, there's my global warming search. The web address is google.com/coop/all that and more. So I'll just bookmark it.
So that's where Delicious.
Yeah, you could reference it with Delicious. But ordinarily, most schools have a website today. Most schools have a website. And on the front page of the school's website, I'm probably going to have 25 different search engines listed. Physics, chemistry, elementary, world history, art, music. Because I'm going to get all the teachers organized. This isn't really going to be an option. I'm not sending this one to committee. In fact, I'm going to change the evaluation of teachers. I'm going to change the evaluation. I'm going to negotiate with the president of the union. And I'm going to say to the president of the union, I think we ought to add a little feature on the evaluation of teachers checklist. Are you contributing your knowledge to the larger community? I'm going to make that part of the evaluation of every teacher in my district. You can't just go in your room anymore. You have to contribute to the benefit of the entire community. And the Google... Yay! And, okay, you clap at the right moment. Very good, clap. Okay. And creating a search engine of all the elementary teachers working together, you check it out. Now you're part of the community. All right. Next idea? I don't want to kill the Google search engine thing.
Quick question. Is there a way to search for being asked for measures that have, is there a way to search for the custom searches, search engine?
You know what? There must be a way, and I don't know what it is offhand. Okay. If I go to googlecom.com and I do, you know what?
Google searches.
Global warming.
Custom search.
Custom search. Yeah, maybe custom search. See if that helps. I don't think it's going to help. Number of people use Google homepage, global warming. No, I don't see it. Custom search engine. It's giving an ad to do the custom search by Google itself.
What if you added your name to it?
Yeah, I'll have to play with this later. I don't know how to do it. I'll have to admit to you, I've never done it, and I'm going to have to figure out if it can be done. I'll get back to you on my website. Okay. Now we have a way to organize the work of all the kids' research and all the teachers' research into one powerful tool. We got that one done. The next bit... I'm convinced that now we have to get creative. So far, in fact, am I out of time? How much time do I have left? 10 minutes? Okay. It's my conference. Yeah, I like that. Hey, this is my conference. Changes it. No. Look at the interview of this girl. She's amazing. Where was I going? NovemberLearning.com. Right. So I'm going to show some examples of... putting it all together here in creative work for teachers. Free info lit resources. I'm going to go back to this. And I, in fact, let me suggest to you, do you remember the British airline website where we saw that they were actually using a white supremacist website to promote Atlanta? Okay. So yesterday in my leadership group, I asked people, you're in a geography class and you're asking kids to plan a trip around the world and you show them this airline site, understand pounds and, you know, and then they find this. What's the assignment that you could build around dealing with the content on the British airline site? Do you have kids write to the company and say, look, you fools, you're using a white supremacist group to promote Atlanta? That's okay. Except for those of you who know screencasting, what I would suggest is we have kids develop a screencast video on how Google works, how they probably found that site through Google by typing in Martin Luther King, and send them the tutorial. In a screencast like jingproject.com. For those of you who don't know screencasting, it's about the easiest way to explain how something works. Okay, there's an example of what we do about it. And but you probably have just made a friend if you don't insult them too badly for their mistake. Now, websites to validate. I love this strategy as well. I just love this. And everyone in the room has seen bogus websites. I'm sure you've seen bogus websites. And along the way, explorers A to Z, I teach, do a lot of work in New Jersey, so I had to find something in New Jersey. Sir Francis Drake was born around 1542 in Wayne, New Jersey. And he developed his love of the ocean by spending many holidays on the Jersey Shore, the lovely shore town of Wildwood, where his parents retired. Okay. And then when you get down to it, they've got this gorgeous chart thing in color of all of his journeys. And his journeys lead from Newark. I am convinced that every teacher ought to have a set of bogus websites in the subject you teach. Purposely. On purpose. And you should sneak them in a compare and contrast example. You know, three websites, one's true, two are false, the other way around, doesn't matter. But you can't just give kids the truth anymore. You have to show them that the world's dangerous. You've got to prepare these kids. I'd rather have teachers try to fool kids before somebody else does. So I just think we ought to make meaning out of bogus websites like this. Age appropriate is fun. Someone said, well, then they'll get confused when they take the state exam. And they can't really get confused because the state exam's in multiple choice and New Jersey is not an answer. Maybe it is, but I don't think so. All right. Besides doing all that, and there's a lot more bogus sites all over, let me do something quite serious now that I certainly hope I don't get anyone upset, but at one point, all of us are going to be desperate for good quality information because your doctor is going to tell you you've been diagnosed with a serious disease, or somebody in the family has been diagnosed with a serious disease. It's probably happened to most people in this room. And they come to you because you're the educator who loves technology, and their doctor, somebody in your family's doctor, told them not to go to the web because they would find a bogus cure. Or they'd find a pharmaceutical company trying to sell certain kinds of chemotherapy where the regimen of this doctor was quite different and didn't want to have to get you false hope down. And so the doctor has, let's say, good reasons for telling the patient not to go to the web. But the patient is well-educated, and she comes to you, and she says, help me. I don't want to listen to my doctor. I want to take some control over my life. And let's just pick... Oh, I haven't backed up in a while. All right. Let's just pick breast cancer. Very common. So I could go to Google, and I could type in... breast cancer, but I really want the latest research in breast cancer. And now that you know how Google works, you know that it's not sorted chronologically. It's sorted by incoming links and all kinds of bits that have nothing to do with the chronology of the content. There's breast cancer, and there's people who've paid good money to get their links up there. And Wikipedia is, of course, at the top once you get past the ones that have paid. And one little, couple of keystrokes here can change everything. View, colon, timeline. Hit a search. Everything changes. Get rid of the ads. Now I have everything year by year, every couple of years, depending on the content. I hit the 2008 set of bars, and now my content has to include 2008 material about breast cancer. It's a completely different result than if I did not know view colon timeline. And I have to tell you, I think there's a lot of kids that don't know this. View colon timeline, the American Revolution. View colon timeline, global warming. I'm trying to give you more examples. Don't just think of it as medicine, okay? View colon timeline, DNA. I mean, you can, this is an important tool. Yes?
How are there links in the
future? I didn't quite hear what you said.
How are there links in the future, like January 2009?
Oh, because somebody's talking about the future. They're saying that this research will go out to 2009.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So just inside, it's reading within.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's right. And then further, let me go back to May, 2008 for a moment. If I go back up and I want to do trials, I want to get involved in a trial. I want to know, is there any new medicine that only a few people are getting access to? I put in trial. And then it changes again. So I can just keep putting more and more keywords in there. View colon timeline can be at the beginning, the middle, the end, doesn't matter. The point is that one day everybody will be desperate for good quality information to solve a real problem. And at that point, it could be too late. You know, I just think we ought to teach people to solve real problems up front. And do I have any more? One last one, may I? One last one, just to bring this home. I teach this doctoral class, as I said. I've been doing it for about the last 4 years with Will Richardson. And man, we had an experience last year that blew my mind. A couple of my grad students are West Point professors, and the commander of West Point about 2 years ago gave a direct order to the faculty to introduce Islam into the curriculum. And one of my grad students doesn't teach Islam, teaches another subject that has nothing to do with Islam, but had to follow orders and tries to find a teachable moment, grabs one when the Pope gives a speech in Germany, quoting a 14th century scholar, Manuel II, saying some very provocative, critical things about the militaristic view of Islam, bad religion, and people went crazy across the Muslim world. The next day, there were riots and people died. I'm sure the Pope did not intend to cause riots by giving a speech at a university in Germany. Nevertheless, do you believe my story? This happened. This really happened. A lot of lessons in this story. The one I want to focus on is my doctoral student tells the cadets, and you understand that the commander's point of view is quite enlightened, really. You're trying to prepare people who are going to make important decisions with a lot of firepower to try and sort out that there might be a different point of view than your point of view. And you may want to consider that on your way to making a decision. This is really important work in preparing future leaders. Okay, so at West Point, it went like this. Pope's riot speech, Turkey. That sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Because my grad student says to the cadets, I'd like you to find content from Turkey dealing with this Pope's speech and the riots. Because Turkey was trying to enter the European Union and first Muslim country to enter the Christian club, and they were having a hard time, and they thought the Pope, in part, was sabotaging their application. So Turkey went crazy. Not just riots, but government, people went crazy. All right. So we do this one, and we get the fine thing, and we find shopping. Okay. So Wikipedia. All right, so just to tell you what happened, and my grad student thought, oh, everything's fine. And I'm looking at the same results going, everything's not fine. This is back is a disaster. It's a disaster. And so he's got CNN, Fox News, the Boston Globe. They're all Western sources. Now, If you change it just a little bit, you know, you get the extension thing going we did earlier, host colon, TR is Turkey. Now the results are guaranteed to be from Turkey. Little change, everything changed. All Turkey. Now in Turkey, there's a scholar who reads the Greek, the original Greek, Manuel II, gets the manuscript. The scholar can't find the quote. Reads the entire manuscript. Where's the quote? Now, in the Western side, how many Western journalists do you think go back and read the original Greek? Who is going to question the Pope from CNN? If the Pope said it, Manuel II must have said it. The Pope said he said it, he said it. Now maybe he didn't say it. I don't even know now. Now I'm confused. Do I trust the Greek guy? Do I trust CNN? Who do I trust? It doesn't matter. Now I know there's a different point of view. I have to understand there's a different point of view. I've got to do this. Now if we had more time, the next big idea here is that in the United States, we must globalize the curriculum. We have to. Yay. And on the way to globalizing the curriculum, we have to teach something simple like the grammar of the internet, that you can hold results only to one country. This is a fun time. If you know the rules, you understand how this thing works, you can tear it apart layer by layer, you can design assignments for students that are more exciting and rigorous and motivating than we ever could before. Huge blast time. By the way, the assignment at West Point, I said to my graduate student, look, you got to go to TechnoRag, which is a search engine that only searches for blogs, as I bet most of you know. TechnoRag. You type in some keywords. You find the blogs of the journalists in Turkey who are writing those articles, and you have your cadets engaged directly on those blogs in Turkey. Instead of just handing something in to a professor. He did that. It was the first time cadets at West Point actually were given an assignment to go to blogs of journalists in another country to engage in a dialogue with people who are on the ground rather than just reading an article, handing it to a professor. Big difference. That's the work of real creative teachers, figuring out the design of the assignment once you know the content of the grammar. With that, thanks for coming. Yay. But there is a book out there that's called Web Literacy for Educators, written by Alan DeVever, with lots of examples like this.